Bin Laden offered the same sort of ideological response for young Arabs and Muslims. The first person to recognize the Islamo-Leninist character of these 9/11 hijackers, that they were not fundamentalists but adherents of an extreme, violent political cult, was Adrian Karatnitsky, the president of Freedom House. In a November 5, 2001 article in the National Review, titled Under Our Very Noses, Karatnitsky makes the following argument. The key hijackers were well-educated children of privilege. None of them suffered first-hand economic privation or political oppression. And none of them seem to have been raised in a particularly fundamentalist household. Indeed, the top 9/11 operatives and pilots, like Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, who shared an apartment in Hamburg, where they both attended the Technical University of Hamburg-Harburg, all seem to have been recruited to al-Qaeda through cells and prayer groups after they moved to Europe. None of these plotters was recruited in the Middle East and then planted in Europe years in advance by bin Laden, notes Karatnitsky. To the contrary, virtually all of them seem to have lived in Europe on their own, grown alienated from the European society around them, gravitated to a local prayer group or mosque to find warmth and solidarity, undergone a born-again conversion, gotten radicalized by Islamist elements, gone off for training in Afghanistan, and presto, a terrorist was born. Unfortunately, bin Laden and his colleagues have found it all too easy to enlist recruits in the Arab Muslim world. I think this has to do, in part, with the state of half-flatness that many Arab Muslim young people are living in, particularly those in Europe. They have been raised to believe that Islam is the most perfect and complete expression of God's monotheistic message, and that the Prophet Muhammad is God's last and most perfect messenger. This is not a criticism. This is Islam's self-identity. Yet, in a flat world, these youth, particularly those living in Europe, can and do look around and see that the Arab Muslim world, in too many cases, has fallen behind the rest of the planet. It is not living as prosperously or as democratically as other civilizations. How can that be? These young Arabs and Muslims must ask themselves. If we have the superior faith, and if our faith is all-encompassing of religion, politics, and economics, why are others living so much better? This is a source of real cognitive dissonance for many Arab Muslim youth, the sort of dissonance and loss of self-esteem that sparks rage and leads some of them to join violent groups and lash out at the world. Indeed, talk to young Arabs and Muslims anywhere, and this cognitive dissonance and the word humiliation always come up very quickly in conversation. Humiliation is the most underestimated force in international relations and in human relations. It is when people or nations are humiliated that they really lash out and engage in extreme violence. When you take the economic and political backwardness of much of the Arab Muslim world today, add its past grandeur and self-image of religious superiority, and combine it with the discrimination and alienation these Arab Muslim males face when they leave home and move to Europe, or when they grow up in Europe, you have one powerful cocktail of rage. This frustration and humiliation is not confined to the Islamist fringes. The reason why the Islamo-Leninists have become the most energized and pronounced opponents of globalization/Americanization and the biggest threat to the flattening of the world today is not simply their extraordinary violence, but also because they enjoy some passive support around the Arab Muslim world. In part, this is because most governments in the Arab Muslim world have refused to take on these radicals in a war of ideas. While Arab regimes have been very active in jailing their Islamo-Leninists when they can find and arrest them, they have been very passive in countering them with a modern progressive interpretation of Islam. This is because almost all of these Arab Muslim leaders are illegitimate themselves. Having come to power by force, they have no credibility as carriers of a moderate, progressive Islam, and they always feel vulnerable to hardline Muslim preachers who denounce them for not being good Muslims. So instead of taking on the Muslim radicals, the Arab regimes either throw them in jail or try to buy them off. This leaves a terrible spiritual and political void. But the other reason for the passive support that the Islamo-Leninists enjoy, and the fact that they are able to raise so much money through charities and mosques in the Arab Muslim world, is that too many good, decent people there feel the same frustration and tinge of humiliation that many of their most enraged youth do. And there is a certain respect for the way these violent youth have been ready to stand up to the world and to their own leaders and defend the honor of their civilization. When I visited Qatar a few months after 9/11, a friend of mine there, a sweet, thoughtful, liberal person who works for the Qatari government, confided to me something in a whisper that was deeply troubling to him. "My 11-year-old son thinks Bin Laden is a good man."